Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here at Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
I'm Brian Fees, graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader.
We are 1 hour and 30 minutes into this movie, and lots of big action. And this is going to be a host participation with with our narrator, Hal, leading the charge. Take us away, Hal.
All right. Minute 90. In the vast Hydra hangar, the Red Skull's voice echoes with fervor as he addresses his masked pilots.
If they shoot down one plane, hundreds more will rain fire upon them.
He pauses, lifting a wine glass filled with dark liquid.
If they cut off one head, two more shall take its place.
He raises the glass.
Hail Hydra!
The masked Hydra pilots thrust both fists into the air, chanting in unison.
Hail Hydra! Hail Hydra! Hail Hydra! Hail Hydra!
We could have rehearsed.
The Red Skull turns, facing the sprawling ranks of his Hydra army, and raises his glass again. The soldiers mirror the gesture, their voices thundering.
Hail Hydra! Hail Hydra! Hail Hydra! Hail Hydra!
Better. The scene shifts to a bombed-out pub in central London, thankfully, its walls scarred and rubble-strewn. Peggy Carter climbs over the shattered entryway, spotting Steve Rogers seated at a table, pouring himself a drink. A radio crackles faintly in the distance, the announcer's voice droning. Blackout is still in effect throughout the London area. Please wait for the all clear. Your attention, please. All citizens shall remain indoors until further notice. Blackout is still in effect throughout the London area. Steve, staring at the glass, speaks softly, his voice heavy. Dr. Erskine said that serum wouldn't just affect...
We'll have to wait for tomorrow for the
rest
of that.
Tomorrow, what that's going to affect.
Yeah. His sense of smell. He doesn't realize this place smells like an armpit. Wow.
So here we are.
Maybe he just is better at the normal human being at chanting in unison.
Yeah. Could be.
Timing is everything.
And, you know, I hate to... sort of feed into a stereotype, but something that was really fascinating to me. I used to do, there was a video game conference that I would go to every year in Germany. And it was interesting, like Microsoft's booth, that was when I was working for them at the time, their booth, like one corner of it. So like less than a quarter of their whole footprint, they had it like a 300 seat arena and with stage. And Microsoft was the number three in terms of the biggies. It was Nintendo and Sony, and then Microsoft kind of in third place. So this is a really big production. But there was something that you saw at all these big booths like this that, like in for Microsoft in the arena, and I didn't go on stage there. I had booths and assistants with just hands-on demos and things. But you'd have people there. They would show some sizzle reel footage and things. And... The crowds would line up for an hour or more just to get in there, sit down, see a few things that they probably already seen. But then at the end of every presentation, and this was true across the board for all the bigger companies, there was just a call and response shouting session. And they just ate it up, and it just builds into a frenzy until it's incoherent and nobody could hear anymore. That at that point we were launching the Xbox 360. So talk, show footage and kind of build the audience up. And then somebody on stage finally can't stand it anymore. And they go, Xbox. And the audience yells, 360. And they just go back and forth. About Xbox, 360. Xbox, 360. Until they've absolutely lost it. And they're screaming and cheering. And then it was like, that was the thing that they waited in line for. Mm-hmm. And cool. Good for them that they like that. I mean, it's, you know, it's impossible not to draw a little bit of a historic parallel and raise an eyebrow, but what do I know?
The I guess this is common. I mean, not to spread the stereotype, but maybe it's just nerds in general. When I used to go back when, well, hearing the word FedEx, usually people think of Federal Express, but in when I worked in DC, FedEx meant the Federal Expo, the Federal Computer Expo that would go on once a year, and it would be another to-do where we'd have Microsoft and Apple and Novell and WordPerfect and Word, all these different people that were basically having different T-shirt guns, and whoever was the most enthusiastic in the crowd got a T-shirt shot at them or some kind of keychain and things. But it was weird how people would get all excited over Token Ring Network. we're gonna give you somebody's gonna get a Token Ring bridge, and it's like, well, what am I gonna do with this? I gotta give it to my boss, I guess, because we can use it at the company. But it's like I have no use for this at home.
Somebody out there yelling, Banyan Vines, Banyan
Yeah,
Vines.
give me ArkNet. Yes.
I'm gonna push back a little. Go ahead. I didn't mean to
No,
stop your story, Jim.
but that's yeah,
Push
but
a
it was
little back on the nerd thing is because I've been to a lot of Comic Cons, a lot of events, a lot of Comic Cons. I've never seen that at a Comic Con. Now I have seen the free stuff. I've been that at Comic Con myself. I was there when the first modern Star Trek movie came out. I don't remember what year it was, but they were giving out posters of the cast if you walk by the booth the right time. So I walked by the booth and I take my poster and I got a Spock and I'm like, this is pretty good stuff. I walk by later, I get my Uhura. I walk by later, I get my Kirk. I walk by later, I get my McCoy. And I'm just looking at this bag of loot I've gotten. I just said, what the hell am I going to do with this? I'm not going to go home and frame six Star Trek posters and put them in my bedroom. What am I going to do with this stuff? It was just, the lure of free was irresistible.
It is powerful.
Absolutely. You're gonna save it for 40 years and then sell it on
Well, that's a smart move.
There you go. And certainly this whole call and response thing. I mean, we see similar sorts of things in sporting events, but it's kind of an adjunct. Like I'm going to the big game and I'm cheering for my team. And when somebody starts to cheer, people sort of participate or something, but it doesn't feel like that's your sole reason for being there. Like you're there to watch the game and that's just part of the, for the right kind of person, that's part of the fun that you have along the way.
As we record this, the World Cup is going on, and I'm taking great delight in the chants from the stands, and to hear 50,000 people all singing the same, four line ditty, sometimes obscene, is just it's powerful. It's a war chant, and
It is.
it makes the ground rumble, and you can understand why a war chant has been a thing in many cultures through thousands of years, because when you get enough people together doing the same thing at the same time, first of all, it scares the crap out of the enemy, and second of all, it fortifies the courage of those doing the chanting. And it's like, yeah, let's go get them.
Yeah, I was in Scotland many years ago when Scotland was playing Germany and they won the World Cup, and the chant, this was way up in the backwoods of Prestwick, Scotland, and everybody in the pub was yelling, "One World Cup and two World Wars, doo-dah, doo-dah."
That's fantastic.
Very, very raw energy in the whole place. But
Right.
I was
Raw
always amazed.
energy.
I got to see Manchester United once, working in Manchester, and usually it's like if you go to a US baseball game, you used to go to Mets games, and it was like, let's go Mets, let's go Mets. But over there, they have like eight stanzas of some song, and everybody knows it, and they go through, let's go on second verse, same as the verse, and on they go.
Well, either they all know it or somebody's just composing it on the fly, and then collectively, instantly, everybody knows it. We follow the documentary reality series Welcome to Wrexham. Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney bought the football club in Wrexham in Wales, and this is as sportsy as I get. But it's like, hey, here's our brand new player. And he got a goal early on in the first half, and then suddenly, yeah, all the fans are singing the same thing, and it's like you didn't know this guy an hour ago. When did you all get together and write this
Yeah,
song? It's just
it
it's
has this
absolutely
Borg thing
incredible.
about it.
Yeah, that's funny. That one, two World Wars, one World Cup thing is hilarious. And it's amazing to me what a wry sense of humor you still pick up on to this day in the UK around the wars and things like that. Like one of my favorite marketing campaigns was for Spitfire Ale. So just nice, good Kentish ale, you know, named after the Spitfire and RAF Roundel on the cap and stuff. A beer that I was destined to love before I ever had a sip of it. And they have these simple ads. And the best one was downed all over Kent, just like the Luftwaffe.
Wow. Ouch.
Oh. That's great.
And there are lots of jokes about Messerschmitts and Fokkers and things too, of course. But anyway. Wow. Neither here nor there, I suppose.
There's something, we're going to be talking about this in a future minute, but something that's bothering me about locations. Peggy is climbing over this pub. She's walking through the pub and she's finding Steve Rogers. And now I'm assuming that what's happening in the pub is the same time frame as the Hail Hydra thing going on in the big hangar over with Red Skull. There's no time difference between them. It's by jet right now, it's like almost 3 hours to go from London to Austria to Vienna, if you want to go to Vienna. And, well, I should save this for a future minute, but I keep thinking, shouldn't he be a little bit closer to the action than London from where what the next scenes are going to be? It's just like if I were writing the screenplay, I wouldn't have put the Hail Hydra thing right here because it just doesn't. I guess, are they going to just sing Hail Hydra for 3 or 4 hours?
It does seem like Steve just keep bopping back and forth from the continent to London and back, and, you know, because we've got that scene of him putting together the Howling Commandos team. That's in London, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all in that secret, that like MI6 thing.
That's all there. And then he goes back and fights some more, and he goes back to London, you know, has a drink in the destroyed bar, and then he'll go back to Germany.
Fighting. Yeah, it just seems like this seems like a misstep in, or like when they were editing the movie together, this seems like the wrong place for the two scenes to be juxtaposed.
To be fair to Joe Johnston, you might be the only person who's ever thought of that.
Hadn't
occurred to me, but yeah, you make a good point. Yeah, speaking of time and place, though, this scene displays a, let's just call it Joe Johnstonism, where a mass media tells you where you are and what's going on. The radio announcer tells you we're in London during the Blitz, and everybody takes shelter. And it's great. It's a great shorthand way to immediately deliver a lot of information without the characters telling you, well, Peggy, here we are in London.
Yeah.
Sure looks terrible here after the Blitz. And it's great. It serves the same purpose as the newsreel we saw earlier in the movie and newspaper headlines we see are here and there. It's the mass media telling you what's going on, give you some perspective from the point of view of the ordinary person who's not in this movie, just somebody in London, of what's going on in London right then.
Right. Now, I'm also puzzled by the Hydra pilots and soldiers. There are pilots there. There are soldiers there. There's only one big plane, and I'm assuming all those little America bombers that are inside the big plane, the Valkyrie. So are the soldiers going to be in the plane too? Are they being transported to New York?
That was my question. What are the jobs of all those guys? Because that's a plane we've seen, or we will see, can be run by one person.
Yeah.
Right. There is an awful lot of people there, like almost an absurd number of people. And is there any possibility, I want to wreck anything for us for future minutes, and there isn't anything where there's more of these giant flying wings sort of lined up?
I don't
just
remember
out of frame. I don't recall seeing any reference to say that there's a fleet of these things.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's going to attack like the Eastern United States with this thing.
Right.
And I was just trying to figure out what the purpose of all these henchmen is around. I've been rewatching the Venture Brothers for the past couple of weeks, and they always go into the nitty gritty of how hard it is to what do you do with henches, and how do you, you know, it's like they need uniforms. Are they being trained? What kind of weaponry do you have to provide with them? And it's a really logistic problem. So like, what is Red Skull planning to do with all these guys he has with him? I mean,
I could imagine you could parachute, 10,000 Hydra, paratroopers into New York City, but if you're going to blow it up with a bomb, why bother?
Yeah. It's into the smoking crater you go.
And is there just some other big ground offensive? Like, this is the big rally, the airplane's going to take off and do its thing, and then we're, the rest of you guys are involved in some sort of ground-based mission, or just there to
Kind of makes
protect the
sense.
base for when the airplane comes back,
That
or
makes sense. You
are they going?
bomb the hell out of America and all the other places, and then you move in with the soldiers to secure it. That makes some sense.
And also maybe pushing back, I mean, right now it's 43, so they're pushing back on the Italian campaign. I mean, if are they going to come out of Austria and then move down through the boot of Italy? I mean, maybe he has a land campaign, or he did have Berlin as a. So maybe he's going to invade Germany and knock out the Nazis.
He's taking over the world in one fell swoop here, or he plans to.
Yeah,
I
that's
guess
kind of
he
what
needs some foot soldiers.
that's what I was thinking as well, was that, this is, we're at least for our from our point of view, okay, we're truly getting a sense for the scale and scope of Hydra. And that is lending some weight and some credence to this idea. That whole, Berlin is on this map that we're he is going to invade his own country, in effect.
And like every like every other World War II movie, the American made World War II movie, we kind of forget about the Russians. It's like there's no Russian. Is there a Russian Howling Commando? I don't know if you ever bumped into any Howling.
No, not in the comics, at least not so far. I mean, we see a little bit of rotation in and out, but in the comics where I am, two dozen issues in or so, I have not seen a Russian. That would have been interesting in 63.
I'm not aware of one.
But it was 4 years later, you had Chekhov on Star Trek, so certainly not unreasonable.
Yeah, it's I mean, I can't think. I'm trying to think of a movie where there's a Russian that played a role in World War II, like Dirty Dozen or any of the, even Kelly's Heroes or something like that. There were, I mean, the Russians never made it to Italy before the campaign was over, but at least in the Balkans, where this is the top of the Balkans into Austria, some Russians must have been involved somewhere.
That's
Yeah,
interesting.
that's a
I
great
can't think
point.
of
You
one.
tend to think of those as almost, the two fronts, Eastern and Western. You almost tend to think of those as almost two separate wars. And the Russians, with the non-aggression pact and kind of, we're allies. Oh wait, we're not allies, and going back and forth. It in my mind, rationally or not, it's always just felt like, well, that was happening over there, or that was this thing, and then, we were dealing with the whole different set of Germans, over in the West.
The only ones I could th the only one I could think of in those movies was the bartender in Casablanca, the one that
Oh
was
yeah,
assigned to take the
yeah.
French girl home. Yes, boss.
It's not a movie, but in and I think I brought this series up before. One of my favorite book series by Harry Turtledove, the World War series. There is a night witch, one of the Russian female pilots flying the old Polikarpov PO2 biplanes to harass German troops, who plays a pretty major role and ends up after the space lizards la lizards la space lizards land. That didn't sound right.
If it's not one thing, it's an
And now it's the space lizards in
always something.
1942. Once they show up and the balance of power starts shifting around the world, this female Russian pilot becomes a central character and kind of allied with, and spoiler alert, falls in love with an SS officer, which is
I can't tell you how delighted I am by the phrase, the space lizards shifted the balance of power. Yes, that
I
follows.
Well, don't they always?
what would you expect them to do, Brian? I mean, come on. Of course they shifted the balance of power.
I wanted to note and compliment Hugo Weaving, whose eyes do an amazing amount of acting in this scene. He's wearing this Red Skull makeup, which looks pretty light and mobile. It looks like he's got some motion in it. It's not a solid mask, but it must have just been oppressive to be in that thing. And assuming it was real, I don't know, maybe they just painted dots on his face and CGI'd it, but I'm assuming it's a real prosthetics they have on him. And his eyes are just darting and expressing and showing so much emotion in the scene when he's trying to rally his troops. I saw it kind of going by and went back and looked at it like three or four times. It's like his eyes go through two or three different expressions as he's rallying these troops and drinking his schnapps. And kudos to Hugo Weaving. I think he does a lot in this movie with the restrictions that were put upon him.
Yeah, definitely in the Susanna Hoffs school of
Of side
emotionalism.
eyes.
Yes.
There's only so much you can do.
Yeah. That hangar, I keep looking at the hangar, and it's like somebody had to build that thing, and he could
That's a big hanger.
that is a bit, you could, yeah. I mean, you could have like laid down a couple of subs and just what, a couple of aircraft carriers or slide them in the back. And
And I've been in the dirigible hangars at Moffett Field and you know, built for the big dirigibles. I've been in those. They're big enough they have their own weather. You could fit about 800 of those dirigible hangers inside this hangar.
Yeah,
This thing is just nuts.
I've been in the one in Lakehurst, and it is enormous. This is, I mean, this would make the vehicle assembly building in Florida feel puny.
Right. Yeah, as we're recording this, the airship hangar Tillamook, Oregon, the naval former naval air station there that's home to a really really pretty cool museum. Was damaged fairly recently, maybe a few months ago, pretty damn badly damaged in a storm. And then it was the, I think it was the Port Authority or whatever sort of the governing agency had voted against repairing it, which was really, really heartbreaking. You have to fix it. You simply have to, even though that's it may be impossible. But I'm hearing now that there are other avenues and there's other organizations that are stepping in, and there's all is not lost. So, but if that's of interest to anybody in the Northwest or on the West Coast, you should check out the Tillamook Air Museum and wish them the best for a recovery.
Wow, very cool. The I mean, there's I gotta stop thinking about all the logistics of this stuff, but just trying to get everybody in a helmet and all dressed at the same time. Get
Okay,
your
every rendezvous at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's the quartermaster for this entire thing? Six, I'm sorry, you need how many and what exactly?
I mean,
And
just
you
the bars of soap, the boot polish. It's yeah, it's astonishing. And somehow he put it all together, while don't you know there's a war on? I'm just thinking about how much metal it took to put together those helmets. And then there's that if go ahead.
You know what, Jim, though, if you look back, I mean, the Nazis were good at this stuff. If you look at the real
Yeah.
world Triumph of the Will movie, they had, you
Yeah.
know,
Well,
they
and
had
they had a
thousands
massive.
of thousands of people in those stands in
Yeah,
the
and
formation.
they had people literally slaving away in caves too. So it's like, yeah, if you want labor, they had labor.
They were good at spectacle. They were good at putting 500,000 people in a place and making them do the same thing at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah.
When deep down, all they wanted to do was buy game consoles.
Yes. And win a World Cup. It's
I had a thought on the second half of this minute, if you don't mind.
sure.
Because honestly, as I was looking through this and preparing for this minute, I kind of forgotten this scene where Peggy and Steve are in the bar. And it's I think it's a sweet scene. It's a quiet moment that I think is the sort we don't see much in a lot of modern movies, where they're just action, action, action. And but Joe Johnston knows that we need these scenes to catch our breaths, to have the characters catch their breath, and just sit quietly with them once in a while to have these moments with them, so that the big moments, the action moments, mean more to us because we care about these people. The reason you care about these people is because of these quiet moments that we're just beginning to have here now with Steve and Peggy.
I do have a simple question. Is this the same pub that the Howling Commandos were in the week before?
Oh, good question. Don't know.
That was my assumption.
I thought it was. It doesn't look like the same doorway, but the bar looks similar. I just couldn't figure that out.
For some reason, I thought I imagined that other pub as being further downstairs but I'm not sure
Well,
exactly why I have that sense,
I
but.
think we were led to believe that it was part of like SSR's, it's part of their headquarters and it's
Their
all
social
underground.
club?
Yeah,
Right.
so but I think this may be the same pub. I just it the doorway doesn't look the same. Where this is the same place that Peggy walked in, but that might be an ante room. Like she might have been further in, and that might have been one of the
Right.
where the the card tables or the billiard room was.
I mean, it seems odd that Steve would just pick any random sort of bombed out pub to go and sit quietly in.
Unless he was looking to get drunk.
Well, which we'll be talking about.
We'll be talking about next minute. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't see him wandering in like a looter, you know, like this was a pub, the pub he was connected to, and it's part of the SSR, and because he's
we don't
see a bartender, right?
I mean, it's the last place he had a drink with Bucky.
Yeah. He walked in and he's helped himself to a drink and stuff. And he wouldn't just wander into anybody's pub off the street.
I like that, Jim. I think that's nice. I think it's a good thought. I like the last place he had a drink with Bucky.
And it's the tie-in with both he and his antagonist are the villain are having drinks at the same time. Yeah. And they're raising a glass to different reasons, actually opposite reasons. So it's Joe being Joe. Wow. Well, this has been a lot to take in. We're going to be talking a lot about drinking heavily. We're going to be catching up with more pub talk in our next episode. But if you'd like to continue the particular conversation we're having right now, we're always available at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America listeners base over on Facebook. If you do like our show, don't forget to subscribe and leave a like at the podcast streaming service where you found this episode. Also, please check out our great big website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.